this broadcast to bring you this important bulletin from the United Press. Flash, Washington.
We interrupt our program to bring you a special broadcast. The German news agency...
We interrupt this program to bring you a news bulletin from Washington. The White House has just announced...
Here is a news bulletin. Shots have reportedly been fired.
Here's another late development, and this news keeps coming in.
This is an NBC News hotline report.
Special report. Verdict sparks violence. National Guard...
That gives you breaking news and insight regarding the paranormal and downright weird, where the unusual becomes usual, and we don't just discuss it. We go in the field to investigate. Here's an odd one from Hicksville, New York. Police on Long Island say a 17-year-old young man quit his job at Target and then promptly stormed into the parking lot and robbed the first family he encountered there. That's right, a husband and wife with two small children. He pushed them, and he demanded money while pointing his hand in the shape of a gun. The wife, fearing for her family's safety, handed over an undetermined amount of money. The 17-year-old said to them, "It's better for me to rob you out here than to let those blanks rob you in there." Now that is a disgruntled employee. They tracked him down a short time later. Hey, thanks for joining us. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren, author of books like Haunted Asheville, How to Hunt Ghosts, and The Secret Wisdom of Kukulcan. I'm founder and president of Lemur Paranormal Investigations. My producer and engineer tonight is Mr. Hardwood Forrest Connor. Good evening, Forrest.
Good evening, Joshua. How are you this week?
You know, I've had a great week. In fact, it's been almost a magical week here on the island of Puerto Rico in the middle of the Bermuda Triangle. Forrest, did you go out and do anything the night after our last show when the so-called supermoon was gleaming in the sky?
I went out and looked at it. That was about it. I didn't do anything special on that night.
It's true. It's like, what would most people do, right? Investigator Shelley Wright of Wright's Coin Shop, I know you are a lady who appreciates celestial wonders. I bet you enjoyed the super moon, right?
It was beautiful.
Yeah. Did you do anything crazy?
No, I didn't. I didn't. Unfortunately.
Well, I started getting texts from friends in Asheville saying that people downtown were kind of acting bonkers. So, of course, that's from a lot of my folks who are working in the tour business down there and really are in the thick of it. But, listen to what I did, guys. Now, of course, last Sunday, they called it the supermoon because it was not only a full moon, but also the closest that the moon would be to Earth for the year 2013. And so that all just so happened, however, to transpire on June 24th, which is also a big holiday here in Puerto Rico that I bet you've never heard of, because I'd never heard of it before, called Noche de San Juan. You guys ever heard of that before?
Night of San Juan?
That's right. Actually, it's the Night of St. John.
Okay,
San Juan is St. John. And this is actually a holiday that is celebrated in various places around the world in Latin cultures. But nobody celebrates it as strongly as Puerto Rico, because it just so happens that the capital of Puerto Rico is called San Juan, so that adds a little oomph to it. Basically, in the same way that December 25th is used to celebrate Jesus' birthday, the night of San Juan on June 24th is used to celebrate the birthday of St. John the Baptist. And so what the big tradition here is, in Puerto Rico, is for everybody to go out to the beach at the stroke of midnight and then to walk backwards into the ocean and fling oneself into the water at night.
Cool.
And the funny thing, of course, if you ask yourself, like, why on earth would they do that? I think it's sort of in tribute to the idea of baptism, where, you know, you're kind of lowered backward into the water. And so, but there are all of these more intricate kind of little superstitions, if you will, and traditions that you hear about from different people. Like, for example, some people say you have to do it 7 times. Some people say you have to do it 12 times. We heard again and again that you need to wear something red and something white. And you do this for good luck. So when you go into the water and you fall, when you come up, you're supposed to take off your white object and toss it into the ocean. And then you're tossing all your bad luck away, and you're only leaving the good luck for the rest of the year. So after talking to so many locals, I decided I was going to do this 7 times, and I was wearing red swim trunks and a white T-shirt. And so So Lauren and I, we go down to the little village here, and we have a few drinks, get a little loosened up. Lauren's very nervous about getting in the ocean at night. That doesn't bother me. I've been in the ocean at night many times. And also, I have never heard of anybody being attacked by a shark around here, ever. I mean, I've talked to people who've lived here their entire lives, and I've never heard of a shark attack in this area. So we go out there to the beach at midnight. And I knew there would be a lot of people, but the beach here is really, really long. So, I mean, the people were really spread out, and so you didn't feel like you were in the middle of a crowd or anything. We kind of had our own little section of the beach. And so it came the stroke of midnight, and sure enough, I go walking out backwards. I do sort of a nest heat plunge into the water, and the water was so warm. It felt amazing. I couldn't believe how warm and calm the water was at midnight. And so I did this 7 times, and the rest of the night I just laid there floating on my back, looking up at this gigantic, bright, gleaming moon. And it was sort of dreamlike. It was surreal. Even thinking back on it now, it was one of those things that didn't seem like it quite really happened. So if you can imagine being way the heck out here to begin with in Puerto Rico, you hear screams of people having fun and celebrating all up and down the beach. You're lying there floating on your back in warm water on a black ocean at night with blue ripples and this gigantic moon shining above. Does that not sound like an amazing night to you guys?
It does.
It does.
Yeah. So I that was so much more fun than I even thought it was going to be. And so I'm going to start going out and just getting into the ocean at night more often, which may or may not be a good idea here in the Bermuda Triangle. But what the heck, you know, I'm begging for an abduction.
Lauren didn't get in at all?
Yeah, she did it too. She did it. Okay. She went through the motions of everything that she needed to do, but after she was done, she was out of the water.
Okay.
And she was just hanging out on the beach, and I'm the guy who's laying there for an hour, you know, just floating around in the ocean. It was fantastic. So You know, hopefully you guys will get to experience this sort of thing at some point. So, would this have bothered either of you?
Not at all, but no. I just want to know about the aftermath. The next day, were there a bunch of, like, white garments washed up on the shore?
Yes, I'm sure.
You know, I didn't go down and check the next day, but I did wonder about that. And, you know, the alarm was like, people shouldn't be throwing stuff into the ocean. I was like, I know, but that's what the locals say to do, so.
And there's probably they probably pay some little guy to go around there and clean up all the white garments.
Oh, yeah. Well, they have just giant parties on that beach anyway, and there's a lot of trash floating around. So I'm sure they get out there every morning and do a major cleanup operation because the beach is always very clean. But, you know, there are huge celebrations. Puerto Ricans love to party. I think I've told you, you know, before, it's like sometimes you'll see a huge celebration. You'll say, well, what's going on? They'll be like, yeah, it's Tuesday. And you're like, okay. There is going to be a giant party coming up all through July 4th weekend. This is the first time I will experience the July 4th weekend in Puerto Rico, and for that matter, outside of a U.S. state. This is going to be interesting. The partying here is going to be phenomenal, and this is our last Speaking of Strange before July 4th. Because, of course, the 4th of July is going to be on Thursday, this upcoming Thursday. So one of the things that I want to talk about on the show tonight for hour number two is sort of the mystical history of the United States. And this is something that I dig into once in a while on the program, but I find it fascinating because if you consider what the United States has become, this enormous superpower, you know, this the latest empire, and if you look at how unlikely it was that we would become such a thing, you know, with this sort of ragtag group of broke colonialists fighting the largest military in the world, the English, there were a lot of almost magical, divine sort of intervention type scenarios that seem to happen at key points in the conflict that sort of turned things around. And so second hour, I want to talk a little bit about some of those key things that some believe indicates that there has been a greater power at play here, sort of more of a spiritual, supernatural force that has placed and positioned the United States where it is. And then, of course, inevitably, we got to look some at what it has become here 237 years later. So that'll be interesting. And in fact, you know, Forrest, last week I was talking about the government surveillance that I had encountered when I was talking about the moon and the possibility of structures being on the moon that aren't supposed to be there. Well, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, there was one more note that I need to tell you guys about that, because Mr. Mobius listened to the show and he says, man, you forgot to tell everybody about this one certain thing that happened to you. And I said, oh, yeah. So when we come back, I'm going to tell you about that. We have a story that I'm fascinated by about a statue that is moving in an Egyptian collection in England. And also here we have a gruesome zombie attack story. Well, you know, they're always gruesome, but these two are particularly gruesome. These are a couple of the worst I've ever heard. So we're going to dig into all that and a lot more. We're glad that you're spending your Saturday night with us. This is the program where we dig into the amazing, the remarkable, the extraordinary, the downright weird. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren, and you're listening to Speaking of Strange.
In the summertime, when the weather is hot, you can stretch right up and touch the sky. When the weather's fine, you got women on your mind. Have a drive, go out and see what you can find. If a daddy's rich, take her out for a meal. If a daddy's poor, just do what you feel. Smooth along the lane, you a diamond or a ton of 25.
anyway, that means we love everybody, but we do as we please. When the weather's fine, we go fishing or go sailing in the sea. We're always happy, the life we're living, yeah, that's our philosophy. Sing along with us, dee-dee-dee-dee-dee, da-da-da-da-da, yeah, we're happy. Da-da-da, dee-da-da-dee-da-da-da-da.
Bermuda Triangle and hitchhiking Puerto Rico's extraterrestrial highway. I'm your host, the Wizard of Weird, Joshua P. Warren, and this is Speaking of Strange. I hope you are enjoying your summertime season, and I know it's still very, very rainy in certain places around the country, but hopefully that'll clear up soon. And a little moisture never hurts when you're going to be shooting off fireworks. The 4th of July, coming up here soon. And, of course, next hour, again, we're going to talk some about kind of the mystical history of the United States. And I also want to touch some on what it has become. But I did want to mention that, you know, last week on the program, I was talking about being sort of targeted by what I believe were clearly government agents. You might call them quote-unquote men in black, whatever, when I started going public on our websites and on Coast to Coast AM about certain structures on the moon. And I think that one of the reasons that may be is that I was sort of in league with a NASA scientist who was a very serious researcher, and that sort of changes everything when you have somebody with some credentials who is sort of on your side and is asking the same questions. But one thing that I forgot to point out and that I probably should have brought up when I was going through this period of time when my phone was being tapped and I was being sort of harassed by all of these folks online, these kind of like cyber lurker, snooper, chat board types, whatever. There was a point at which I went into the post office to get my mail, and this is a P.O. box that I'd had for 10 years, and I went in, and the P.O. box was locked. And so, of course, I had no idea why my box would be locked, because I've always been very good about paying it up on time. So I went into the post office, stood in line for a long time. I get up there and say, hey, why is my P.O. box locked? And they say, oh, Mr. Warren, just a moment, please. And they turn around and they walk back into the office and came out a minute later with a form that said Department of Homeland Security. And they said, we are not going to be able to open your box back up until you fill out this form for Homeland Security, updating all of your physical information, your physical location, and they asked to see my identification again, and I think they may have asked for my Social Security card, two or three different things that they needed, and I said, you know, why is this necessary? And they're like, it was Homeland Security requested it. And so I did it, of course. I filled out everything. I have nothing to hide, and they unlocked my P.O. box. So, you know, was that connected to everything else that was happening at that time? It would be awfully coincidental if not. Do you remember when that happened, Forrest?
I do.
Yeah. So, Shelley, you have access to a P.O. box, right?
Yes.
Have you ever been asked to do such a thing?
No, I never fill out anything for Homeland Security yet. No. And we've had our box for probably close to 40 years.
Yeah. So, I don't know. You know, it's just one of those odd little things that I wanted to point out. Okay, let's get into some weird recent news stories. And let me also sort of tell everybody, if you go to speakingofstrange.com, you'll find a live chat during the show, regular updates on weird news around the world, and more information on topics discussed. Also, the hauntedasheville.com website is fully reactivated. after we went through the hacking attack. So go to hauntedashville.com. This is the perfect time to take some of our ghost tours, walking tours, trolley tours, and go see the Asheville Mystery Museum. And when you go into the Mystery Museum, one of the showcases there is Art Bell's alien statue. Now, for those of you who don't remember, Art Bell, the man who created Coast to Coast AM, for years broadcast the show with a 4-foot-tall, 100-pound wooden statue of an alien there at his studio. And Art eventually, after having this thing for years, very urgently decided that this thing had to go, because his wife and daughter were freaking out. He'd recently gotten remarried, and his wife and little daughter claimed that this statue was coming to life at night and moving around, and Art did not want it in the house. And so we ended up putting it in the museum, and I've often told people the very first night we had the statue, I was there late till about 11 or 12 o'clock, making sure the statue was perfectly positioned in its little display there. And I came in the next morning, and the entire body of the statue had shifted about 20 or 25 degrees to the right. And I was immediately angry because I thought somebody come in and messed with the statue. But then I realized that there were no security logs or other records of anybody going in or out. And nothing else in the museum had been touched. So, I just had to sneeze there. So, the weird thing is, if there had been an earthquake or some kind of vibration, there are a million little delicate, fragile things in the museum that would have been moved around that weren't moved. And to this day, for the life of me, I cannot explain how that statue moved. We've had a camera on it since then, and we've never seen it move again. So you can imagine when I saw this story from Manchester in England, I was really excited. There is a collection there that has a 10-inch little black statue inside of a glass display case. And this little statue is 4,000 years old. And the curator of the museum, who is the only person with a key to that display case, realized that every other day he would look at this statue and it would be turned around facing the opposite direction. And of course, he became obsessed with figuring out what the heck was happening here. So he put a video camera on it, and he captured a beautiful footage that will be posted for you at speakingofstrange.com that shows this statue spinning on its own. And it does this almost every day. Let me give you an idea of what it looks like. Okay, the statue, again, it's 10 inches, is looking out the front of a display case, and the camera is looking at the left side of the statue. And so you see this is a sort of time lapse, because it happens very slowly throughout the day. As people are walking by, the statue slowly turns counterclockwise. So it turns to the left until it faces the camera, and then it continues moving until it is exactly facing the opposite direction. And none of the other objects in the display have ever moved. So he took this footage, and this is a bona fide, highfalutin, you know, fancy pants curator at an academic museum here. He took this footage to a bunch of scientists. The best explanation the scientists can come up with is that during the day, the vibrations of the people entering the museum and of maybe the local rail cars and that sort of thing are creating this sort of cumulative effect, which is making this thing turn around. But the problem here, once again, is that nothing else is being affected. It only turns 180 degrees, and then it stops. It doesn't continue moving after that. And a lot of people think that it's very interesting that this is a statue of the Egyptian god Osiris, regarded as the god of the dead. And so some people are wondering if the God is displeased with the people who are coming in. Maybe he is demanding some type of worship, or he is giving us some signal that something bad is about to happen.
Well, there's inscriptions on the back of this the statue that demand offerings of, I believe, like of beer and like and the one that stood out to me was beer, but demanded offerings of beer and a bunch of other miscellaneous things. And there's one theory that Osiris is wanting people to see these inscriptions so they'll be offered to him.
Okay, exactly. I'd forgotten about that. You're right. And that's not in this particular story, but I remember reading that in another story. We're coming up on a break here, but this is an amazing tale. We're going to follow up on this for you, and it makes me feel inspired that maybe our statue will start moving soon. But when we come back, I'm going to get into these terrible zombie stories. And you know, all these zombie stories are terrible, but I was just talking to Shelley right off the air, and it's hard to figure out anymore which is more terrible, a guy getting his face eaten off or some of the things that you're going to hear about when we come back. I'm Joshua P. Warren. This is the show where the unusual becomes usual. It is called Speaking of Strange.
Fly to fancy on
a
usual becomes usual, and I am your host, Joshua P. Warren, and you're about to hear some horrible stories about some recent zombie attacks. And it's probably very inappropriate for me to go ahead and plug this first, as you'll see, but I'm going to. I'll get this out of the way. My big event this fall is called Puppy Fest. Puppy Fest. The name says it all. It's going to be in Asheville at the Civic Center, now called the U.S. Cellular Center, on September 28th. That's a Saturday. One day only. Puppy Fest. Costs $10. Come bring your puppy. We're going to have all kinds of fun, crazy puppy events, and we're going to be searching for tomorrow's superstar puppy. We're going to be shooting a TV pilot, and the winning puppy is going to get on a dog food bag. It's going to be a cover dog. And also the owner of the winning puppy is going to get a cash prize and a trophy. So let us know if you plan to attend Puppy Fest, and let us know what your puppy is. Go to puppyfest.com for all the details. Okay, here we go. Horrible stories. These are two zombie attacks in 2 days from Texas. One of them occurred here in a house on Saturday, June 22nd. Supposedly a guy, they say he was high on some kind of synthetic pot or something like that. He suddenly stripped off his clothes and ran around the house on all fours like an animal, growling and screaming. Witnesses there said he no longer looked human in the eyes. At one point, one of his friends locked the back sliding glass door. The man leapt through the door, breaking the glass, of course, cutting himself badly. As he was bleeding all over the place, he started yelling and screaming that he was possessed by the devil and wanted to eat flesh and blood. He began to scoop up his own blood with his hands, pushing it into his mouth and eating it, and then he discovered the family dog. He jumped on the dog, quickly killed it, and ate most of it before the police arrived. They say that, to be more specific, he killed the dog by eating it alive, okay? But that's not all from Texas, because, again, within 2 days, here's the other attack. In Houston, police were called to a house where a woman had inflicted serious knife wounds to herself after she had killed her 18-month-old son and ate the baby's brains. So, in both of these cases, they believe that people had been smoking something known as synthetic weed or K2 before they went crazy and turned into brain-eating zombies. So, you know, the weird thing about all this is that the guy who ate the dude's face off in Miami, as it turns out, was apparently not on any type of drug. And everybody was really hoping he would be, because that would be an easier explanation. Now these two people were believed to have been on some type of drug. Maybe they were, maybe they weren't. I haven't seen any sort of definitive forensic data on this. But what is worse, you know, what makes these people want to immediately begin devouring flesh? I mean, that's the common thread here. You know, eating the man's face off while he's alive, or eating the dog while it's alive, or eating the baby's brains out, probably while it's alive. You know, I just have no idea how to put this in any type of perspective. Do you have any thoughts on this, Forrest?
No. No.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Shelley Wright, how about you?
No. And I want to hear about the after. You know, do they come out of it? Do they know what they've done? You don't hear about the after.
We've read a lot of these types of stories that don't have an enormous amount of follow-up. And so I really don't know. And of course, I always think it's interesting when you start seeing trends in the news, whatever these patterns are all about. So I read that story, which is of a distinct zombie nature. And then I go on and I see this other story, also from Texas. There is a college there called Texas Tech in West Texas. And a 14-year-old boy is dead now because he was on the campus and he was playing hide-and-seek with his friends at night, running around campus. Well, at Texas Tech, apparently right in the middle of the campus, there is a huge statue of a bull, of a longhorn steer, right?
Right.
And this kid who's running in the middle of the night ran straight into the horn of this statue and impaled himself. Says they think he may have tripped a little bit over one of the lights, lost balance, and went straight down on one of the horns. And it didn't take him very long to die. They say, you know, it pretty much pierced him in the crucial critical area of his chest. How weird is that, huh? To find a kid impaled on the statue of the bullhorn there in the middle of a university campus. Odd. Okay. Let's move on to another story. Apparently there has been a plot recently to kill President Obama using a death ray. You guys heard about this one?
No.
Obviously it didn't work.
Well, as far as I know, it has not worked. It says here two men have been arrested over a plot to kill Barack Obama with a giant homemade death ray. The FBI arrested a 49-year-old man and a 54-year-old man, both of them from New York State. Says here they built some type of an X-ray machine that used deadly amounts of radiation and a focused beam to kill targets, and this thing could be controlled remotely. And the FBI said the device would have been both functional and lethal. And it was the makers called it, quote, Hiroshima on a light switch, end quote. The FBI said one of the guys was a member of the Ku Klux Klan, and they had already been investigating him because of some of his previous threats that he had made about killing people. And he'd been assembling all kinds of X-ray devices for almost a year. But they say that apparently this is a true military-quality lethal weapon. So these guys have been charged with conspiracy to provide material support to terrorists through the use of a weapon of mass destruction. That's pretty odd. And at the same time that that story comes out, here's another story that has sort of a death ray flavor. A large container ship that was carrying 4,500 containers loaded with weapons to help out the Syrian rebels more or less vaporized right in the middle of the ocean. Now, you might be saying, huh? Let me explain this again. Obviously, there are rebels in Syria that are trying to overthrow the government. The United States, apparently, is supplying some weapons to those rebels. So here goes this ship sailing across the ocean. It says here it was going from Singapore to Jeddah with all these weapons. And all of a sudden, the ship just kind of vaporizes and breaks into parts and sinks. And all of these containers are just drifting now in the ocean. Now, there has been, for years, a technology the Russians have been working on called Feu de Lance, which is what engineer Tom Bearden calls it. And this is a quantum weapon that transmits energy fields across time and space and can actually break apart the molecular structure of physical objects. So it's a very intelligent, highly advanced weapon. And there is a lot of speculation that the Russians, who do not want the Syrian rebels to succeed, have used this as an example of their technological superiority, and that the Russians may have used this kind of, for lack of a better term, death ray technology to vaporize this ship and make it melt away into the ocean. Is that exactly what happened? We may never know, but there's a lot of controversy over that. And when we come back from this break, I'll tell you about another naval-oriented controversy. This one, however, is a little bit on the lighter side. It is about Captain Crunch. That's right, Captain Crunch. I'm Joshua P. Warren. This is Speaking of Strange, the program. We're digging the amazing, the remarkable, and the downright weird. Stick around. We'll be right back. Tonight, speaking of strange, I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren. Coming up next hour, well, since July 4th is impending, well, we're going to discuss some about the more mystical elements, some might even say divine intervention related to the history and the formation of the United States of America. And we're also going to look a little bit more at sort of what the country has become 237 years later. We're definitely not going to get political about any of this. We have too much of that already in the media, but we are going to talk about some of the more perhaps paranormal aspects of this country that has become the most powerful country in the world. Before the break, I was telling you there is a controversy about what some believe is a U.S. naval officer named Captain Crunch. That's right, I'm talking about the Captain Crunch, or should we say Seaman Crunch. The Pentagon has spoken out on a story of major importance. Is Captain Crunch really a captain? Some very detail-oriented blogger noticed that the serial spokes cartoon wears three stripes on his sleeve, making him a commander. A captain has four stripes on the sleeve. So after the story went viral, U.S. Navy spokespeople confirmed this mishap and told the Wall Street Journal, quote, "We have no Captain Crunch in the personnel records, and we actually have checked. We have noticed. We have notified NCIS. We're looking into whether or not he's impersonating a naval officer, and that's a serious offense." End quote. Another blogger has speculated that perhaps Captain Crunch is French, based on his Napoleonic hat. I must say, I've never even thought about any of this before, and yet now that I've heard of it, it's kind of hard to believe that it's taken to the year 2013 before somebody looked at his credentials. Wouldn't you say, Forrest?
Yes, definitely. Now, who's to say which country, or, like I said, that one blogger said, what country is he the captain of? Maybe three stripes in another country and another navy is a captain.
Yeah, maybe he's the captain of General Mills or whoever the heck makes Captain Crunch.
Captain, you know, was it Kellogg or Post or who? Who makes the captain?
I don't know who makes Captain Crunch. I haven't had Captain Crunch in a long time, but I remember when I was a kid, once in a while they'd come out with treasure maps and stuff like that, and I really got into that, obviously. That's probably why I'm here in Puerto Rico right now, because of Captain Crunch. So thank you, Captain Crunch. Next story. This is from, get ready, Forrest, Fort Pierce, Florida. A woman there needed a plumber, and she called 911 instead, twice, and then pulled the fire alarm. 28-year-old woman, 911 told her it's not a law enforcement issue, and she should call a plumber. And you know what? It was after she talked to the 911 folks that she pulled the fire alarm. And then she said that, you know, she doesn't pay her taxes for nothing, that she has water leaking out of her toilet and wants someone to fix it.
Oh, yeah.
Why can I relate to this somehow? So anyway, she was arrested on charges including false fire alarm and public disorder crimes, that sort of thing. Okay. Here's a story from Tucson, Arizona. U.S. Customs and Border Protection said that a car or actually a truck, went blazing right by them that said U.S. Fish and Wildlife on the side. Later, they located the truck and found that it was a phony. There were two illegal immigrants inside with 933 pounds of marijuana, and they were wearing fake U.S. Fish and Wildlife uniforms. Huh. That sounds like a good idea. They say that the marijuana was estimated at $466,500. Wow. How about, who knows how much those guys had brought across the border wearing fake uniforms. And lastly, here's a story from Sacramento, California. Headline, man arrested for throwing a spear at a passing vehicle. It says, man arrested for spearing a passing vehicle who looked and acted like a caveman. He was 56 years old, standing in the road at 7:38 p.m., he threw a spear at the front fender of the vehicle that was driving by, and they arrested him for assault with a deadly weapon. You know, I've often thought, in this day and age, when movies are being made about so many old topics, I should be the guy to make the movie about one of my favorite cartoon characters, Captain Caveman.
Ooga booga.
Nobody's done up Captain Caveman. I need to find this guy in Sacramento, California, and say, you're the one I've been searching for. You're going to be Captain Caveman. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about the 4th of July and mystical aspects of the formation of the USA. I'm Joshua P. Warren. This is Speaking of Strange.